From the nation's capital, this is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Our guest today is Nancy Levine. She is the director of the Justice Policy Center of the Urban Institute, www.urban.org, one of the premier research organizations in the United States, nonpartisan. I think everybody at any level of government, federal government, state government, local government, has used research from the Urban Institute in terms of looking at whatever it is that they want to look at. They have an extraordinary reputation. And one of the things that I want to do is to focus on a program that they did. It's called, or a piece of research called Returning Home, Understanding the Challenges of Prisoner Reentry, which represents the only published empirical research with a good sample size looking at the statistical differences between the experiences of women versus men as they come out of the prison system. Thus, the title of the show today is Research on Women Offenders. Nancy Levine, director of the Justice Policy Center, Urban Institute. Welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
All right, Nancy, I said that you're nonpartisan, that you're extraordinarily well-known. None of that, there's not an ounce of exaggeration in any of that. But from your lips, the Urban Institute does what?
Well, the Urban Institute was established in 1968 as a nonprofit, nonpartisan research organization, originally designed to evaluate the Great Society programs of President Johnson, but it has since expanded to include both domestic and international work. We have 10 different research centers spanning education policy, health policy, tax policy, and, of course, I'm the head of the Justice Policy Center at the Urban Institute. And within the Justice Policy Center, we span a wide array of research from gang and youth violence prevention to courts and, of course, prisoner reentry is one of the cornerstones of our research portfolio in the Justice Policy Center.
I mean, you've looked at law enforcement practices, correctional practices. Heck, you've even looked at cameras, speed cameras.
Public surveillance cameras.
Public surveillance cameras.
That's right.
I mean, you've looked at just about everything there is to look at within the criminal justice system. I always find it delightful when I have an opportunity to talk to you. But this particular piece of research, Understanding the Challenges of Prisoner Reentry, you're talking about a piece of research, and for the layperson out there, I mean, it's all sorts of research, some good, some bad, some empirically correct, some not empirically correct. What you have is a large piece of research, and you're talking about several jurisdictions where you take a look at men and women coming out of the prison system to establish the differences between their experiences. And one of the things that is, I think, extraordinarily important from your research is the fact that there is a huge difference in the experiences of women and men coming out of the prison system. Empirically, women have a greater degree of substance abuse, a greater degree of mental health problems. They don't have the economic training, the job training.
You're stealing my thunder here.
I'm sorry. This is profound. There is a profound difference, and I'm not quite sure everybody realizes this.
Well, let me start a little bit by explaining the impetus behind the larger study called Returning Home. Because at the time we launched it, which was now several years ago, there weren't a lot of studies that looked beyond what we'd call recidivism. So there would be researchers who looked at people who were released from prison and determined what percentage of them ended up being returned to prison. And with the available data they had, which was mostly administrative records from the Department of Corrections, they were able to say, well, people who were sentenced for these types of crimes or for this length of time were more or less likely to return to prison. That's what I call recidivism studies. But no one had really done a reentry study, understanding that reentry is not a point in time. It's a process, right? So no one had conducted the kind of study that looked at all the different aspects associated with reentry success and failure. And the only way to do that is to interview people behind bars and track them in the community after their release and interview them in the community as well. So much of the data that helps us explain reentry success or failure has to come from the people who are experiencing reentry.
Sure.
So that's why we decided to launch Returning Home. It was a tremendous effort. It involved four different states. And, of course, in one of the states, we did look at women exiting prison.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, two, because in Maryland, we did a pilot where we did a small sample of women there. We ended up looking in Texas because Texas had such a large volume of all kinds of prisoners leaving that we could get a sufficient sample size of women in a relatively short period of
second time. Largest correctional system in the country.
Yes. But what we learned in Maryland about women in our pilot study, it was similar to what we found in the Houston sample, and rings true when I have conversations both with women who have experienced reentry as well as service providers who are supporting their successful reentry.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's a lot to be said about the experiences of women that perhaps is understudied, because when we think of reentry, we look at the numbers and we see that the vast majority of people leaving prison are male.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while this is true, it's also true that the share of women behind bars has increased at a greater rate than that of men.
Yes.
Over time. So even though they're a small population, they're an increasing population, and their experiences are different, as we'll discuss, in ways that I think have relevance for the development of reentry programs that may often be overlooked if you're only looking at a male population.
Now, in no way, shape, or form am I going to try to create a sense of sympathy or justification for crimes committed. If you do the crime, you do the time. I think that's the prevailing wisdom in so many jurisdictions throughout the country. But women offenders are not only different from male offenders in terms of their experiences when they get out. Tell me if I'm right or wrong. Feel free to criticize me or if I don't get it correctly. Most women offenders, before they go into the prison system, have multiple histories of abuse by somebody. In my mind, so many of the women offenders that I've been in touch with throughout my now 30 years in corrections were tragic figures. Mm-hmm. I mean, they suffered immense abuse, sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. Rape is not uncommon, mm-hmm. Not only by people who they know, but in many cases, family members.
Mm-hmm.
To me, there is no wonder that the rates of substance abuse are higher,
mm-hmm.
That the rate of mental health problems are higher, because they come from such violent backgrounds, and there is a huge difference between the violence that they encountered in their younger years versus males. Am I right or wrong?
I would say that you're right. I mean, certainly women who end up behind bars have extensive histories of substance addiction and mental illness that are very difficult to disentangle from their personal histories of sexual victimization.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to know which came first, but you can understand how they'd all be interrelated.
Most of the women I've talked to tell very tragic tales.
Yes.
We've had many women offenders before these microphones, and they have told for public airing, mm-hmm. Their experiences, and you just feel as if you've just gone through a hugely emotional experience, mm-hmm. after interviewing them. A lot of times after the program, I said, do you really want this to go out on the air? Do you really, you have the choice. I won't even put this out. Mm-hmm. I said, do you really want to be that honest and that brutal about, mm-hmm. your background? And a lot of them, to a person, if they've said, yes, I want this to go out, I want to talk about this.
Well, I imagine in some regards it's cathartic. And also I think that a lot of women want to share their stories to shine a bright light on this issue and help people understand better that, you know, yes, they may have committed crimes, but there's a bigger story to be told.
And that bigger story, generally speaking, is not told, correct? I mean, one of the things that's astounded me in my years within the criminal justice system is how little the story is told.
Mm-hmm.
It's as if we're afraid to confront the massive amount of abuse, and in many cases, flat-out child abuse, in terms of the families that these individuals come from.
Yeah. I think that's right. I'm certainly no expert on the child abuse and specific to women who end up being in the criminal justice system. but I expect that's right.
But before we get into the points of your research, I just wanted to sort of set a stage in terms of the fact that if people are wondering why there's such a difference in between men and women coming out of prison, it's my contention, you don't have to respond to this, it's my contention that it has much to do with the environments that they came from before they went into the prison system. Mm-hmm. I was reading in your report where there were two sort of responses from men and women in terms of getting out. One was, I want to control my own life. That was men and women. I want to reunite with my children.
It's actually a little bit more colorful than that.
Oh, go ahead.
So in the interviews that we had with people prior to the release, we had a question at the end, which is what survey designers would call an open-ended question. So we didn't give them the answers. We invited them to come up with their own answers. And it was, what are you most looking forward to after your release? Mm-hmm. And literally, and I'm not exaggerating, the most common answer among men was pizza.
Pizza.
Right. And second to that, calling my own shots. Mm-hmm. And the single greatest by a long shot answer among women was reuniting with my kids, you know, seeing
right.
my baby again.
Right.
And it really speaks to different priorities as well as potentially different support systems.
The majority of women getting out of the prison system have children. I've seen stats up to 80%.
That's right.
So when they come out, not only do they have to deal with a higher rate of substance abuse, not only do they have to deal with a higher rate of mental health problems, they've got to figure out some way to find work. Then they have less of a work background mm-hmm. than men, and they have to reunite with their children and somehow support their children. That stacks the odds against women offenders to a degree that it almost seems impossible that they can accomplish all that.
Mm-hmm. No, it definitely makes it more difficult for women. When we compared women to men in our Texas study, we found that they were twice as likely to end up back behind bars than their male counterparts. And clearly, these challenges that are great for anybody leaving prison, but to know that they're even more extreme for women.
They were twice as likely to return to Texas?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That's truly amazing. And do you think that the stats that you came up with in terms of your own research provides a bit of that explanation?
Oh, yes, for certain, particularly when it comes to substance abuse. Women were more likely to engage in substance abuse following their release, and we knew already that they had more extensive histories of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to address addiction behind bars, especially if you have a treatment program that doesn't continue in the community. The research is very clear in that regard. And so, even if you have the best intentions and you do get access to treatment behind bars, if you don't get in the community and you're susceptible to all these temptations, you're more likely to use, and those who are more likely to use are more likely to end up back behind bars. The thing of it is, though, what we found in Texas, and it's hard to know how much this rings true in other locations, but in Texas we found that women were less likely to have access to substance abuse treatment,
mm-hmm.
even though they had much greater histories and addiction levels.
It seems as if, again, I don't want to go overboard with this. I talked about what happened before prison. Now we're talking about what's going on inside of prison, and the research focuses on leaving prison. They have greater histories of substance abuse, mental health issues, but they do not have the same opportunities that many male offenders have.
Mm-hmm. They're, to have treatment behind bars.
Again, it just seems that the deck is mm-hmm. continuously stacked against women offenders.
Right. But it has real implications for policy and practice.
Sure.
And, you know, just to know that you can make a difference by giving these women more access to services and treatment behind bars. I mean, that's huge.
Absolutely, it's huge. The research does indicate that not many people get any of these services at all within the custodial setting throughout
right.
the country.
Yeah, and we've actually found that there's a high degree of mismatch between those who get it and those who really need it as well.
Right.
This is a scarce resource that's not even well allocated.
It should be allocated towards who?
Those in most need, including the women.
So. Right. But the higher risk offender as well as the women offender?
Absolutely. I mean, if you're looking at, you know, you have a reentry program, you want to look to medium and high risk because that's where you can make the biggest difference.
In terms of going over your stats, in Maryland, half the women we interviewed reported daily heroin use. daily heroin use in the 6 months leading up to the most recent incarceration, compared with slightly more than a third of men, and half of women also reported daily cocaine use during that period, compared with 22% of men. So we're not just saying that there is a disparity between use. We're talking about huge disparities.
It's huge disparity. Now, the heroin use statistics may be unique to Baltimore, which has, you know, historically had a heroin epidemic that doesn't seem to show any signs of subsiding. Mm-hmm. But still, I mean, you see the differential between the men and women, and it's tremendous.
Mm-hmm. From a policy point of view, where do we go with all of this? I mean, it's pretty abundantly clear that we are ignoring women offenders. I've read somewhere along the line that women do better in treatment programs than male offenders, considering the fact that they're 80%, I think, is the figure that I've read. So just say somewhere between 60 and 80% have children. This means a lot to society to provide these programs, because we can take them out of circulation, out of the criminal justice system, if they do better in treatment programs than men, and all those kids are suddenly have a source of income. They have their mom. They're being taken care of. There are huge ramifications from a societal point of view in terms of your research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. I'd also clarify a point that sometimes I have a hard time wrapping my head around, because we talk about children, we think that they're minors, they're children, right?
Mm-hmm.
But actually, when we delve deeper into the issue of support systems for both men and women, mm-hmm. when they were leaving prison, we looked at family support. And we asked people, do you have someone in your life who is there for you, who supports you, who will provide housing for you, mm-hmm. Support you financially, et cetera? We were heartened to learn that women did almost as much as men. They reported roughly the same degree of family support, but the sources of support were very different. For men, it was usually either a kind of senior maternal figure in their lives, a grandmother, an aunt, or a significant other, a partner, sometimes a sister. For the women, it was typically their adult children. So when you talk about children, actually a lot of these women have adult children. If you look at the average age of release, it's something like 34, 35 years, maybe a little bit older for women than men. And they have adult children of their own who they are relying on to support
them.
Good point.
Thanks for the clarification. I do want to get on to the issue of family support, and I do want to get on to the issue of the difference between men and women when they come out dealing with that level of family support. But let me reintroduce you, ladies and gentlemen, Nancy Levine. She's the director of the Justice Policy Center, for the Urban Institute here in Washington, D.C., www.urban.org, www.urban.org. So family support is crucial for all offenders coming out of the prison system. Your research shows that the greater the degree of family support while they're incarcerated, the better they do when they get out, correct?
Well, actually, the greater the support post-release, the better they do. However, that is predicted by more contact with family behind bars.
Right. If there's a continuous line of communication while they're behind bars, that paves the way for more communication, more interaction, more support, more cooperation when they get out. Most prisons are located literally hundreds of miles from the areas where these offenders came from. In the District of Columbia, they all go to federal prison.
That's right. Most of the women are housed in, I think it's Pennsylvania, and some of them as far as Texas.
Mm-hmm. And West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Texas, but they are spread out all over the place. But even when the 14 years when I worked for the Maryland Department of Public Safety, Hagerstown, Cumberland, the Lower Eastern Shore, they were within the state, but it might as well have been on the other side of the moon. Cumberland's not easy to get to.
Yeah.
From the Baltimore, Prince George's County areas where most of Maryland's crime occurs, I mean, it's quite a hike to get to some of these prisons. So they're isolated isolated and they're far away. How do you maintain that level of contact when you're isolated and far away?
Yeah, well, that's very difficult. We did have a family component of our returning home study where we interviewed family members and discussed both the challenges of staying in contact with their incarcerated loved ones as well as the challenges associated with welcoming them back into their homes and communities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, by far the single greatest reason for not having contact with their incarcerated family members was the distance mm-hmm. of the prison from home. Texas was unique at the time. They didn't allow phone contact.
Really?
Prisoners at all.
Really?
Which is stunning. So it was, you know, mostly letters.
That's amazing.
I believe that's since changed. Although, you know, in other states, other jurisdictions, you'll hear complaints about the high cost of toll calls. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a tax on the inmates and their families, which I've heard some correctional administrators justify as the only means that they can have to raise funds to provide programs and services. Mm-hmm. But it seems a little bit wrongheaded to create barriers to contact with prisoners and their family members just to, you know, generate resources
sure.
to serve them. It's almost like you're they go against each other, those two efforts.
I think it's the state of Washington, and I read this just within the last couple of days, is now providing video contact between offenders and family members. And that struck me as being the best of all possible worlds.
That's right. And they're looking into that for the D.C. Code felons as well. And it's something that I would recommend as a great compromise, given the distance. You know, it's really so disruptive to a family to set out to journey to a prison mm-hmm. to see their incarcerated family member, not just the actual distance or cost of gas, but the nature of a prison setting is such that you never know when you arrive whether they're going to be
right.
in lockdown. And there's no visitation. It could be either canceled for the day.
Right.
Or more likely what happens is they just say we're on lockdown. We don't know when we won't be on lockdown. So you're just waiting and wondering what to do. You know, often people bring children because they think it's important for the children to see mm-hmm. their incarcerated parent. And yet, you know, these environments aren't kid friendly.
No, they're not.
It's
as somebody
really
who's been in and out of a lot of prisons,
yeah.
it's downright brutal.
Yeah,
it really is for the family members and for the kids.
Right. So, you know, video conferencing is a great way to achieve that family contact that's so important in
sure.
shoring up support on the outside.
Now, in terms of employment, one of the things that we find is that, per your research, is that they don't have the same employment opportunities or backgrounds as males, and they come out, and that lack of employment and the lack of skills really hurts them upon release.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just keeps going on and on and on in terms of the disparities between males and females.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And, you know, it's no surprise when you consider that if women have more extensive histories of substance addiction, they're going to have more spotty employment histories. So they're already going into it at a disadvantage. Certainly after release, they're less likely to find employment. Even those women who do find employment end up earning less than males at about $1.50 less per hour than their male counterparts. And then, you know, and I know I feel like a broken record on the substance addiction issue, but I know a lot of people say the key to successful reentry is finding a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, is it really? Because what good does it do to find a job if you haven't dealt with your addiction issues?
Right.
It's just giving you resources to go and buy drugs and continue your habit. And soon enough, you're not showing up at work. You've lost your job. You're committing crimes to buy drugs, and you're back behind bars.
Or your mental health issues.
Right. I mean, you know, most of us these days, and I say us, you know, you and I, Len, are really immersed in this issue of prisoner reentry, talk about a holistic approach.
Mm-hmm.
That you can't really just tackle prisoner reentry by looking at one thing. And certainly employment is critical, but especially for women, you need to look at it holistically.
Well, I mean, look, just the differences on employment between males and females, where 38% of men had jobs lined up, 17% of women had jobs mm-hmm. lined up before leaving in the prison system. 61% were employed upon leaving men. 37% mm-hmm. of women were employed upon leaving the prison system. Obviously, the stats show, and I don't want to beat this point to death, but I don't want to leave it alone either. I mean, the disparities between men and women are huge. Mm-hmm. I go back to the same thing I said before. They do better in programs than men. They have a better mm-hmm. track record.
I think I know why.
Go.
I think it's because one of the findings we had in comparing men to women is their expressions for need for help. And now, granted, we've already given a lot of examples of why women should need more help, but they're also more willing to say, I need help. So that's a different kind of an attitude entering a treatment program, knowing that you need help and admitting it readily. And I think that makes you more open to receiving it and benefiting from it.
I did 1 year of jail or Job Corps, where the younger individuals were given a choice by the court, go to Job Corps or go to jail. 70% of the women that I encountered were wonderful, compared to maybe 30% of the men. Now, that may just be my own internal bias, but the women that I encountered said to themselves, I'm in a jam. Job Corps can give me a skill. They can give me the tools. It can relocate me if necessary. I want to reunite with my kids. The women were by far my best students.
Well, you know, you just referenced reuniting with children and getting back to that topic. I mean, clearly that women have a bigger stake in making good on the outside because of their ties to their children, whether they're grown children or not.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, if they're minor children, they have even more of a vested interest. And we even found that among the men in our research, those who had stronger ties to their minor kids
right.
did better on the outside.
Did better. Everybody yeah. does better on the outside.
More likely to get a job. More likely to stay out of prison.
They have the motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the kids and family that yeah. provides them with that motivation. Yeah. And it's the contact that they have while in prison that builds that bridge to that motivation.
Yeah. But make no mistake. I mean, just having a child doesn't give you that stake. I mean, what we don't know well, although we know some from our research, is what those relationships were like before the incarceration.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in some cases, including in the case of women, they had very little, if any, contact with their kids because they were on the street.
Right.
You know, that someone else was caring for their kids and had been for some time now.
Mm-hmm. But the idea of being in prison and having the opportunity to contemplate mm-hmm. who they are,
yeah.
where
what's
they are,
important to them.
What's important to them, where they want to go. Most of the individuals that I have met within the correctional system, that is the first thing that they express.
Mm-hmm.
That they express A, regret for everything that's happened, and B, they really have this burning desire to reunite with their kids.
That's
I'm
right.
not quite sure, quite frankly, that burning desire is there with the men.
No, I think it's not. There's been some more qualitative research in the UK looking at fathers and trying to get them more bonding with their children prior to their release that suggests that it's possible
mm-hmm.
and that there are great benefits
mm-hmm.
from doing so. But we're starting at a different place, I think, with men than with women.
I think we're starting at an incredibly different
yeah.
place
yeah.
between men and women. Final couple minutes. If you're talking to the mayor of Milwaukee, if you're talking to an aide to a governor in California, what do you say?
Well, certainly don't cut your reentry programs. We understand that financial times are very difficult right now and that it's easy to think about the things that people don't see as the easiest to cut, you know, what to put on the chopping block. Are you going to close a prison? Or are you going to cut a program? I would argue keep the programs in place and look at those programs and think about whether they are truly catered to the people that you're trying to serve. In the case of women, I've heard some people argue that you can develop reentry programs that are same for men and women, and I think that there might be some truth to that, but it doesn't acknowledge the different way women approach treatment, approach learning, and approach life. So programs that are more tailored to women who are leaving prison, I think, could really benefit them greatly.
About 30 seconds left. Are women the low-hanging fruit of the criminal justice system, women offenders? Are they the ones who, if you provided the resources, would get you a good bang for your dollar, a good investment for your correctional dollar?
I don't know that I can say that. I think that because of their extensive drug addiction histories, they're a tough population to deal with. Certainly, the benefits can be great, but it might take more effort at the outset before you can see those benefits.
But if you have an impact with women offenders or offenders across the board, it can save states literally tens of billions of dollars.
Absolutely. And, of course, in the case of women, if you're supporting their successful reentry, you're also supporting their families and kids.
Nancy Levine, the director of the Justice Policy Center of the Urban Institute, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being with us on D.C. Public Safety. Before we go, www.urban.org is the website for the Justice Policy Center for the Urban Institute. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being with us. Thank you for your cards, letters, your phone calls, your emails, your suggestions, your criticisms. We appreciate your participation in the show and have yourself a very, very pleasant day.